I'm Amy Lewis, and this is episode 3 of the Geek Whisperers. It's a podcast for and by IT professionals in the social media field. So I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are here today to talk about any number of things. To kick us off, we're going to, John, I think you had mentioned a book that you'd mentioned on one of the first episodes. You wanted to share a little bit more with us.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to call people's attention to this book. I talked a little bit about the history of social interaction, socially computer-mediated communication was actually a term of that was used back then. And actually, one of the seminal works on this, on virtual communities, is actually available in full text online. And that's from a guy called Howard Rheingold. He was one of the innovators out there. And it talks about the well. It talks about MUDs. It talks about a lot of the early stories from the 80s and 90s. It's called The Virtual Community. The text is available free online, and I'll go ahead and put a link to it in our show notes.
Awesome. That's, thanks, John.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely need my history lesson here.
It's a good read. It's a really good read. The behaviors of people are exactly the same. You know, we just repeat ours. We just, history is a spiral. We just repeat it.
That's the best thing, right? And that's why we're in love with unicorns, because they're mythical and magical, and they have been for all time.
Hey, so now, so that you can catch out our show notes, at least over on our blog, geek-whispers.com. But we also have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. But Amy, I just noticed that a unicorn popped up on our Facebook page.
So
makes me giggle. And we're going to talk about some of the videos that you produce. And I notice a lot of unicorns in your work product. How would you explain that to your VP?
You know, that's a great question, which I actually had to do at VMware PEX this past week. So it's funny you mentioned that. Unicorns, I declared 2013 the year of the unicorn. A lot of people were giving me some grief about bacon and overabundance of bacon. They were on diets. They were vegetarian. They kept kosher.
And you were using bacon a lot in your activities.
Bacon, we'll talk about it again. Activities were very steeped in bacon.
Gotcha. Bacon tweets.
Exactly. And so I declared 2013 the year of the unicorn. It had come to be as part of originally Engineers Unplugged, which is a video podcast that I do. It's two engineers, a whiteboard, 7 to 9 minutes, and to keep it interesting, and I didn't tell anybody this when we shot the first season, I wanted them to have to do something that would be a little bit off their game and that everybody could kind of engage with and understand, because we have these amazing experts that come on Engineers Unplugged, and they're taking us down these incredibly technical paths. And it's kind of fun to see someone caught off guard a little bit, but not in a way that's embarrassing for anybody, just fun. And so the Unicorn Challenge was born. Something everybody had to do. At the end of Engineers Unplugged, and again, don't tell, I ask everyone to draw a unicorn. We've done them collaboratively, competitively, abstractly, and it is truly amazing. Sort of going back one step further, it comes from this idea, and many of you listeners out there may have heard this or talked about it in the IT world, that concept of unicorns, of we're asked to do the impossible oftentimes. And I felt that unicorns were a great representation of the kind of things we talked about. We often talk about trending, aspirational things, the end of the rainbow. And so much like bacon, and even maybe more universal than bacon, is the unicorn, sort of representative of all that is good. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you
want
to take the unicorn challenge?
That just went from a goofy thing I had to do when I jumped on Engineers Unplugged to really meaningful, in the sense that, yeah, the idea of doing the impossible, especially in the corporate environment right now where innovation is the key word, where doing more with less is the status quo, the idea of, you know, just having a mythological creature that farts rainbows as your symbol is pretty exciting.
I know, and well played, Matt, that I know we're going to dig into some of the stuff that happened at PEX, and John, unfortunately, you weren't there with us. Matt stood too close to the whiteboard and ended up on Engineers Unplugged. It's like a gravitational pull.
I love it. I love the unicorn idea is great. I welcome the unicorn to our Facebook page.
Well, and I feel like, again, as it represents us, that we are chasing that dream as well. We have incredibly interesting jobs in my mind, and we are tasked with something that I think is challenging, which is doing it well and measuring that up and down the chain. So making it have meaning to our audience we serve, to our stakeholders internally. And, you know, we've challenged ourselves now a third way in sort of sharing that out to our greater audience, our peers. So that's the unicorn.
It's magical.
So this week, and again, we've referenced it a couple times. So Matt and I were at VMware Partner Exchange this week, and we've all been talking about this. John has hosted many a tech event in the past. And before we got on the air, we were talking a little bit about the history, sort of what I had never thought about this, but how has social media changed how we are at events? Gone from a time where you go in, you don't know anybody, to you might go in knowing several dozens of people before you even hit the show floor. So, John, what do you think? What's your opinion on how social media has changed how we behave and how we handle these tech events we end up going to?
Well, I think events are actually a lot different now these days. At least they feel that way to me. When you think about it, especially tech events, whether they were something big like Comdex or a smaller one, you know, it's a bunch of geeks and introverts, and you put them in a hotel, and you expect them to have a good time and interact. And, you know, these are geeks, right? And there's only so much interaction they can do. You don't know anybody. You've never met them before. Occasionally, over the course of many meetings, if you go to user groups in your local town or whatever, you'll get to know people. You'll see familiar people, or you see people from, you know, other companies in your city, or people you've, you know, and then there's people that you've read about in Dr. Dobbs or another computer magazine, but you've never met in person, and you finally get to meet them at the conference. And so it was I felt that interaction was very stilted, pre-social, like, especially because you didn't know anybody. So you just sat there in line in the lunch line, you sat there in line to go to a seminar, and if you were gregarious, you would chat up your neighbors, but you really didn't know people. After social, and especially it started for us with the VMware community, you know, back 10 years ago, but especially after Twitter, so 2008, 2009, I really think the whole situation changed dramatically, because it didn't take you 2 or 3 or 4 cycles of a conference, 2 or 3 or 4 years of a conference to get to know somebody. You interacted with them all year long. And once we got the VMware community and the enterprise IT community up on Twitter, the amount of interaction, you got to know the people, you got to see them shoveling snow, you got to see them on airplanes, you got to see pictures of their kids. And then by the time you get all together in one place at the conference, it was like a homecoming. It was like an old home week.
Exactly. I love that experience every time. And I just went back to Vegas for the fourth time. And I find it, to, in nice terms, to be a festering pit of mankind. But
this is not my favorite spot.
Yeah. And it's evolved, though, for me, where this time, this last week of being at Partner Exchange for VMware, I felt like I was at home. And that was weird for me, because I don't like that place very much. But I was surrounded by all the people that I want to talk to all the time anyway. And it blew my mind, actually, to realize I've only seen Amy in person, I think, twice. And we talk all the time and been doing this podcast. And just being there in person with people like her and a bunch of others that I've met socially through Twitter primarily, and then get to see maybe once, twice a year if I'm really lucky, it's incredible. It feels like you've got fun people to go out with, either for a meal or to go see something technical or to just say screw it to the day and go see a show at night.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I love hearing this sort of history, and I love that analogy as well, that it's like a homecoming, because jumping cart before the horse, but one of the best practices we've sort of put in place and really enjoy is putting a photo album together right afterward on Facebook. And again, choosing Facebook very intentionally, I've gotten some pushback, and I've put things on Flickr and in a more open environment as well, but it feels like a summer camp album. You know, right afterward, you put it together, you label it by the show name, and you tag everybody you know in there, and there you open it up so permissions allow you to have friends tag friends, and it expands the circle, and we've got it there. So I don't mind doing that kind of archival work for us to have the event and then reflect on it.
That's genius.
And it's a lot of fun. It's like, I enjoy it as well. And then I can't even tell you the number of times you're at a future event or just hanging out with people that you know through the industry. And they're like, what happened at so-and-so? And they're, you know, I've got it, date and time. Oh, I have, let me reference my photo album.
And all, that's blackmail material.
Well, I saw
some of those Instagrams that came out on PAX. I was really jealous that you guys were at PAX and I was not. I saw the social exhaust that everybody put off. I really enjoyed that. But everybody's engaged, right? You definitely have a dinner party partner. You have somebody, a familiar face, because you've seen their avatar on Twitter for the whole year. And I think the people who go to shows are much more engaged. And I think we in social media throw around the word engagement perhaps a bit too much. But this is a prime example. And I think if you're a conference organizer, I think if you have a strong social program before, after, during the show, and you are in conjunction with the community that has a strong social footprint like ours do collectively, I would guarantee you that you have better return attendance and better attendance in general for a conference like that.
That's true. And let's get into it in a sense of I want to be the contrarian this round, because we always need one. And what's the point? What's the point of social at events? If I tell you, as I was told not terribly long ago, that the sole purpose of these these customer facing events is lead generation. Now tell me why I should care about social, and how do I care?
You're the contrarian. You tell us, man.
Well, I think social's stupid, and I just, unless you're going to get me money, I don't care. How about that?
Well, that's certainly the way we pay for the events. I mean, the way VMworld gets paid for, and the reason it doesn't even cost more money, is it's the sponsorships from that solutions exchange. Certainly for the sponsors, it's about lead gen. That's why they send people there. It's synergistic, right? Lots of things come together. The show floor with all the booths where people are doing lead gen, that both helps pay for the conference as well as lets people come to see what the latest offerings from the vendors that they want to work with are. There's a lot of education that goes on, certainly at VMworld, EMC World, Cisco Live, there's Citrix Synergy. They're all, there's a huge number of labs and seminars that are, you know, very technical in origin, as deep as we can go for the audience. So I think a lot of things come together to make people, want to travel on a tin tube with bad air and cranky babies to a conference.
And I think you just reminded me of something, John, that when we talk about lead generation, it doesn't have to be directly into sales that moment. What we're actually inspiring people to do is interact with our brand, which brings it back home to what all three of us do for fun and work, which is community building. We're building a community of people to be interested in things, and those people with booth spaces are building communities, like little semicircles of communities on that show floor. It all builds up to a greater purpose, and it's that mind share that people are investing in that will lead to anyone caring about them in the future.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to push it a little further even, that I think I'm trying to introduce this concept, this dual track of lead gen, because I actually think what we do is lead gen. We do acquire contacts, and it's very atraditional because the contact we acquire through Twitter is not a spray and pray contact. And I know I could get pilloried in the marketing community for this, but it is truly an engagement platform where someone has to choose to participate, and with a very simple click of a button, can turn you off, can stop listening, and without even a click of a button can stop listening to you. So it's a very delicate kind of age-old art, if we want to talk about the history. It's affinity marketing. It is creating relationships, actual relationships where trust is built. And I think community reinforces that. And we're talking about these different tactics and techniques, sort of lifting the curtain a little bit and sharing some of the things that we do to inspire and engage and amplify community, help it along. But we are doing contact acquisition. We are doing it every time we meet someone new and we exchange Twitter handles. We're doing it every time we follow someone and they follow us back. And it's what we do personally. And in aggregate, I would argue it supports the whole of the brands that we back. But it is very difficult and would be far more expensive to engage a community at scale like this, to do it on a one-on-one basis, endless, you know, executive briefings, So this is the most cost efficient way to get our messages out, to educate en masse, and to encourage peer-to-peer learning, which I think is the big, I think that's actually the biggest, not just from on the stage, but in the hallway.
Sure. If an enterprise marketer will tell you that a customer reference is absolutely the best proof point that they can have in the sales process at certain points in the sales process, what is a conference except a giant pool of customer references talking to each other?
Absolutely. And if you're lucky, you get to listen in. And, you know, not to, again, tout the horn of Engineers Unplugged again, but that was the concept of every time we would hear someone say, oh, I wish we had recorded that. I want to blog about that. Or it ended up on a napkin. That's our goal. We literally parked ourselves in the hallway at PEX and at Partner Exchange and snagged people with a proverbial cane on the way by.
Yeah. Hey, I want to hear about everything that went on at PEX and some of the activities and tools that you guys used. I did want to say one thing before that, though, which is just to follow up on your lead gen comment. And in fact, the payoff of this dual track lead gen is once you have an active and mature set of social channels, like we do at VMware, I can drive more actual leads, like people that have signed up for white papers, people that have opted in for more contact, people that are in the buying cycle, through my social channels, then sometime in certain, you know, with a caveat in certain campaigns with certain material, then they do through Google Ads or through other very expensive ways of doing lead generation. So
very, very true, because you have an authentic connection,
yeah.
Which leads back to what I will continue to toot the horn of, which is measurement. Measure how many people, how easily, how efficiently, how quickly you can disseminate a message. Is that sort of collateral, that sort of like have that in the back of your pocket that you have a strong network to lean on. That's the only reason I get to conferences these days, because EMC Elect is blowing up into this network of connections.
Hey,
and I really enjoyed that connection that you guys are making. And I think that's important for our listeners as well, which is a lot of perhaps what we take it back to the unicorns. Perhaps what we do seems very fuzzy and surreal and very unicorn. But it's crazy like a fox marketing, if you will. We are doing, all three of us, things that are very intentional, programmatic. Yes, we're trying new things. This is new media. This is a new way of doing business. And with the community's permission, we succeed. But it is tied back to some very traditional principles and traditional ideas of marketing and the concept that marketing works and it supports sales. So as foreign and as unicorn-ish as some of the tactics may be, they do have an end game based in metrics, based in reality, and based in proof points.
Hey, we've been kind of abstract here, and I wanted to maybe ground it for a minute. What I was not at PEX, and maybe for some of our folks that have not been to a big tech conference, which, you know, whether it's from IBM or whoever, they all are kind of similar. But I'm kind of curious, what are some of the things that you folks did at PEX this year? You guys were just at the VMware Partner Exchange Conference. What were some of the social things that you did and some of the social ways that the conference organizers laid out the platform for social interaction?
I think one of the ways that we found to be most efficient is we actually have a template that we run on every show, and it breaks this into a couple things. So social media at events is both a combination of driving people to buns and seats, as they call it, trying to get people to register for your sessions, show up in your theater, show up at your particular events where you're going to educate them in the ways you want them educated. Content marketing, traditional content marketing, where you're pushing out content that you're amplifying at this sort of moment in time because you have people's attention, sort of focused attention at this moment in time, and activities. And I think that's been one of the new kind of ways of thinking about it. And John, you really kicked that off nicely at the beginning in saying, otherwise you end up eating breakfast by yourself, or you only connect with someone because they have on a cool t-shirt and you ask them about it if you're extroverted enough. And with the advent of social media, and then furthermore, us and sending someone whose sole job is social media on site provides a whole different level of coverage. So when I go to these events, I can co-create content. So I bring a video crew. We can create content together. I can do live reporting. We have a program we call Roving Reporters. And either I or a technologist will go on camera and interview people to get more information about what the conference is, about announcements that have been made, reactions. You can do this on Twitter. You can do live tweet, a session, etc. Bring the nuggets out, point things back, get links back to important data. So there's all kinds of ways to amplify and make more of the investment your company is already making. If you're, say, if you're sponsoring an event, if you are an attendee, then linking into these social channels. If you're not on Twitter and you want to attend an event, you must. This is not.
That wasn't a complete thought. You're like, no. If you're not on Twitter, here's what you do. It's like, no, if you're not on Twitter, you must. Game over.
just I can't even speak to you. I'm speechless, and that's rare.
Well, I do want to jump in there because there was somebody I met this year. He wasn't on Twitter before he got there, or if he did have an account, it was zero followers, totally quiet, just lurking. And we talked at one of the many great social meetups that happened, and talked about it and why I'm there and why I use it and how I know everybody that's on the porch with us outside. And he's just like, all right, I'm sold. I officially am no longer lurking. And he started talking to people. He started being himself a little bit. And I think a little bit of what we do is kind of ambassadorship.
Sure, sure.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Matt, what was your corporate rationale to come to the VMware conference you were just
at? Oh, man, I'm going to have to play this one delicately. I made a twofold argument. One was that if we're not there, our competitors will have a greater social presence than us. That was actually a pretty compelling argument. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do a little bit of measurement to prove my case that if I am allowed to be there, I do a good job at amplifying. And I also try to echo, just kind of hear good ideas and overhear it and tweet it as quotes of people and just kind of get people's message out there and flowing. So there is the competitive play. And then the other one was the future play where, early on in the year, we're always focused on EMC World, our big trade show. And looking at that, a big part of it's the hands-on labs experience. And thankfully, due to the hard work at VMware, we're engaging and planning to use Project Knee, which is the front end of what they're using for their hands-on lab at PEX. And there's nothing like having just one more technologist that's a marketer to understand that as people plan out how that show flow goes.
There's a lot of logistics around that lab.
Oh my! And there's so much room for misunderstanding where you have a bunch of people that they're professional marketers, professional event planners. They're absolutely incredible at what they do, and they can plan an event better than I ever could. But they get totally freaked out by a web interface or by talking about multi-tenancy. And I like that stuff. So I went right up to the guys, shook someone's hand, and asked them who to talk to. And I ended up talking to a few of the lead designers and developers. They walked me through exactly how it works, told me how to edit it and customize it and how to plug it in. And now I'm just kind of, on the bench just in case if we need some questions answered, mm-hmm. if people are confused as we try to roll it out. So those were my two main arguments. And I ended up supporting our overall social effort quite a bit. And then just, you got to let the serendipitous happen.
Well, the problem is the serendipitous is, I think, where a lot of the valuable stuff happens. And I would love to hear about that in a sec. But what I think is brilliant about what you guys both did and what I did not do this year is I just stayed home. I was kind of tired. And I didn't really have any concrete activity to do is that you've used I'll use the word excuse of Engineers Unplugged, the video program, the content co-creation program, the EMC Elect, and the the various things you just talked about, Matt, as a rationale to go, and then you get all these soft benefits underneath, which is that I saw you didn't sleep very much, you were meeting with people in the hang space, there were tweet ups that you attended, there were breakfasts and lunches and dinners, all either organized, some of them were organized formally by the sponsors, but others came together via social. And were pre-planned, like some of the tweet-ups, and others just came together on the fly. And your footprint there was pretty amazing and something you can't really budget for in a travel request.
It's funny. One of the tweet-ups we actually threw and was exactly inspired by the kind of thing we talk about here. If I can pat ourselves on the back a little bit more.
Go for it.
But honestly, this is to encourage everybody in the sound of my voice to consider this as well. I've had some folks come up and ask just to talk about, I'll take this on activities only for now and pick up the other thread in a bit. So I think there's good reasons to do all these things. When we talk about justifying going, we break our plan into before, during, and after the show, so you can think about the activities. I think that you can do remotely a lot of the planning and the tweeting and the driving people there. You don't have to have somebody on the ground for the sort of that social activities, social media that you would do around a show before the show. But during the show, to Matt's point, you're not going to get the same kind of coverage if you don't send someone on the ground. And I will push back. You don't have to be the most technical person. You can be social first and technical as a side, because got to defend my people and still get the job done. So it's putting the right person for the job, and that changes. It just depends on the circumstance, what you want out of the interaction.
It's kind of a new role though, because traditionally when we look at, okay, who are we sending to Interop or who are we sending to HIMSS or whatever, there's a booth staff and there's speakers, but a reporter, a roving social reporter, really has never been part of the event kit in previous years.
Yeah, it's also been easier to get people's attention than it's not anymore.
I've actually found that the booth staff who are not already active on social are terrible reporters.
And think about it. You know what? I think about it like something like, say you're walking around New York City, a place with a lot of people, which reminds me of a conference, and you're walking around. Everyone looks the same. Everyone's just in your way. They're just people in between you and where you're trying to go until you see someone out of the blue that you didn't expect to run into, or maybe you did but were hoping to, and you see somebody you recognize. And there's that moment of recognition that is probably one of the most powerful human experiences.
Absolutely. And then you can capture that and take a picture of them and put it on Instagram.
Right.
Right. And then you Instagram it. And then really what you have there is an opportunity to connect. And what social is doing for us, it's giving us that sense of connection in the mass of strangers of, say, 10 to 40,000 people. And it's powerful. It's really exciting for people.
Well, and it does take the content outside the four walls. So there's a lot of things that have been done at all the tech events over the years to give them a longer tail, if you will, and more amplification during the process. So it's easy to get navel-gazy when you're there and kind of focus inward, and we're all here together and this is the entire universe. And in some ways we are doing our job if you want to mute us and you're totally annoyed that you're not there with us. That actually means that Matt and I are doing what we should be doing, because we want it to look fun and interesting and engaging, and we want you to be curious about what we're learning and who we're meeting and the kinds of conversations we're having. And I would argue the content creation is the sort of longer tail, because then you have the relationships and you also have the content that makes the value of the show that much more valuable. Yeah. But again, that's sort of one set of very tactical tactics. And I have a SlideShare presentation up about this that I will happily add to the show notes, so you can take a look more and sort of see how it's a very structured program. This is how I think. This is how I plan. This is what we do.
Well, one of our tools we do is along with the before, during, and after, but we also do a little grid that's for people at the show and for people away from the show, because we're always conscious that,
really good point,
that, you know, there's a certain set of channels and a certain set of content that's very relevant if you're at the show, but not at all if you're not at the show. And so,
yeah, and think about what you just said, John, that you were living vicariously through a lot of the tweets and the engagement. So you felt at least, you know, it's not the same, but it feels like you're at least experiencing why I'd want to go there next year.
Sure. But whereas somebody at the show appreciates a tweet that says, hey, the keynote is starting in 10 minutes, you know, you better get there. Somebody away from the show is more appreciative of, here is here's a set of pictures of people who were there, or here is, let's say you went to a show and you had a speaker there. Here's the outline of the speaker that we had at the show, and this is the white paper that his talk was based on.
You know, absolutely,
and that's available to people outside the show, and they'd like that.
Right, and here's an interview. Here's a 3-minute interview we did with a speaker afterward with some crowd reaction, and we're going to tie that to a blog that they write, you know, that features the slide deck that they used.
Right.
So it's a way to, and people, we've gone back and forth. This would take the conversation down a whole nother track, but people have said, oh, does this give too much away? Will people want to come back to the events? And I think the answer is yes. There's still so much, in the same way that even in distance learning, for instance, they still have moments where you come together in person whenever possible. Most classes have that hybrid approach. And that's exactly what this is. Essentially, we're in an industry where it is constant learning, constantly evolving, evolving very quickly, as much of IT is. And to stay on top of all the topics, you have to have a bit of both. So we enable you to learn more as quickly as possible and connect you and, again, lure you back in for the next year. Picking up the other thread we were talking about a little bit of some of the in-person glue, because I think that is one of the, we can talk about all the practical reasons, but like you said, John, you've got to overcome a barrier to want to try to convince your management to get on a tube full of bad air and come to Las Vegas of all places. And one of the things that we have found to be incredibly successful are these impromptu tweet-ups. So nothing special, not the fancy customer appreciation event that's the full court press, you know, massive, massive outlay. One of the more successful things I think that we did this time was born of a conversation Matt and another fellow Hans and I had on Twitter. And we were getting into PEX a little bit early and everybody was saying, what are you doing? And so we simply decided to do it programmatically. And we put out a tweet bite, called it Geeks Without Borders, and introduced the idea that we don't care who you're with. Bring your own wallet. Nobody's paying for this, but come and hang out just for the joy of getting together and talking about technology. It was a really great event. People are, is this social? We use the tools of social to get people together in real life. And I think that's one of the most interesting applications of what we do, because but it's very difficult to quantify. So how do you explain that we spent no money and had 40 people show up and had some incredible conversations about technology? What do you guys think?
I think you already put a quantity in that sentence. You said 40 people showed up without spending any money. And then you really, since you asked, I don't know if it was intended to be rhetorical, but since I'm the defender of metrics, I'm going to dig into this. I would take those 40 people, do a quick API call, pull all of their follower accounts and aggregate them together and be like, we just struck a goldmine of people who are interested, not because we're paying for anything, just because we're human beings they're interested in, and we happen to have common interests, and we're in the same place at the same time. So that sort of number of taking people's followers, at least that's the one that works really well for my audience, and it might be different for yours, and showing that I just had 40 people in a room with an aggregate of 80,000 followers with interests in cloud, EMC, Cisco, VMware. They also resell NetApp and are into HP, all of that. But they came for us, for the three of us, and for each other. That's a powerful argument, no matter how you slice those numbers.
I agree. You do know you're double counting there, though, in terms of followers. There's a lot of overlap between everybody's followers.
That's a 2.0 kind of concern.
Well, also, you can just talk about impressions. So impressions count, even if you see them more than once. Now, I love tweet-ups. Because they've obviously come up since Twitter, so since 2009-ish. And I think it's been a very much of an education process for us, because initially when we said, oh, yeah, we're doing a tweet up, and one of the other departments said, oh, well, we're going to do a tweet up too. And they said, well, our budget is only $20,000. Do you think that's going to be enough?
Oh my gosh.
We're going to go and buy each other some beers. I think it's enough. And they're like, we're going to have Twitter. They thought they needed to have plasma screens with, you know, tweets falling down there, and signature cocktails, and then they had a whole panel presentation and stuff, and it really wasn't a tweet up, but eventually now I think we've gotten the more in the spirit of what these things are. And what I think is brilliant is now we used to have one or two tweet ups at a VMworld, but now at PEX they were happening every night because people would be like, hey, let's get together, and everybody would tweet and people would show up. I think it's brilliant.
And it works.
We were talking a little bit again before of how it's interesting that sometimes these things will take on a life of their own. So we talked about last year was definitely the year of bacon. We started doing tweet ups. I'm a food person, and I would again do these tweet ups, not necessarily around a technology, but wanting to make sure people understood the doors were open to everyone, that technology was the vector and it wasn't going to be a product sell. And so we did a tweet up called V Bacon that has become a bit notorious. In a good way. So we had an incredible following. We started this at Cisco Live in San Diego, and we did it with chicken and waffles, but also bacon. And it's grown ever since then. We did one at VMworld in San Francisco last year, and we had 160 people show up. Jeez. And probably violated any number of fire codes. And again, you know, these are low cost events. People had incredible engagement. I had people come up to me afterward and say, this was a great opportunity. They're late at night. They tend to be very technologist focused. So not necessarily the C-level. They're hitting a very different slice of the audience. I had people come up and say, that was amazing. I got to finally see in one room, we had all the people together that I'd been wanting to catch up with, because during the day we're all pulled in a million different directions. So that's another one of my arguments in favor of them, is it forces us to put something on our calendar and all show up in the same spot, which is convenient for everybody. And that, I don't know, it's interesting. I got some pushback and I'm curious again, what you guys think. I actually had someone say, we need to set these up where you do a PowerPoint or a presentation. And I just started laughing.
You did?
That's not. And I said, this isn't Florida and we're not selling real estate.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I mean, when I've had to do sponsors, which I have had sometimes, if you're doing a no host tweet up and you're going to have a couple hundred people there, I have let people stand up and say a few sentences. But no, that just wouldn't work. The other thing that these are not is they're not the official corporate conference parties where people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and rent out, you know, bars and have, you know, shows and things like that. And all the big players do that at the conferences. I don't know. Do people ever confuse the tweet ups for those? They're such different scale. Maybe not.
I don't think they do. I think it's an interesting thing we could get into. And as we talk about, if people listening again are thinking about setting off and trying these programs on their own, I found it's very important, and it's not hard to engage with your events staff, the people who are charged with doing some of those bigger scale things, because they have an unbelievable amount of experience in terms of guiding you to venues, sort of telling you things to do. Like I've learned to take wristbands with you, find identifiable ways to have people in your party, even if it's going to be even slightly at scale and you're picking up the tab, find ways to identify people. You can do giveaways that are fairly inexpensive. They'll often support you in that if they have extra swag from the booth, et cetera. So you want to definitely engage your event staff and engage people around you. Let people know for promotional efforts. But it is such a different slice that I think we hit a different audience. We get a different thing out of it. I do consider it contact acquisition. It's how I've positioned it within my company. To give it a try, and it won't necessarily always take fire immediately, but and a good point, John, you could have somebody stand up and say a few things. There could be branding. You could have something on the wall, but it is a different beast. I think it's meant to be more informal, and I think people take it as such.
Yeah. And I think what you just hit on is just set the proper expectation. If you want it to be something where people are going to definitely get presented something, tell them up front and they'll either show up and opt in or opt out. It's very similar to Twitter. If it's going to be something that's informal, make sure people know it's informal and it doesn't get too preachy. And I feel like as long as transparency stays the key, I've found that we haven't had a single problem. And EMC likes to take a bit of a different strategy at times. Like, I'm very comfortable just bringing a group of people I don't know together and having a beer and a bowl of fries and calling that a tweet up. While some of my more traditional marketing colleagues, they're still just tiptoeing into this and they prefer to have people meet at the booth and have a presenter and have a giveaway. And we're calling both of those things tweet-ups. As long as you set that expectation, I'm getting more comfortable with the idea of, you know, the word is being used however it needs to be used, because it's basically leading to the idea of engaging influencers that are on Twitter. But as long as you tell them up front, it's going to work out okay.
Yeah, you need to set that expectation. If they're going there looking for a drink and instead they are in a, you know,
they see a slide deck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a surprise.
And nothing better than a free drink to convert somebody to Twitter, because in Barcelona, we had some comrades who they were like, I can't go to a tweet up. I'm not on Twitter. I'm like, don't worry, I'll fix that.
Well, so here's a question. Does this stuff scale? So at this conference you guys were both at, there was probably 4,000 people there, of which, I don't know, were 400 are socially engaged, maybe 1,000. At VMworld is 20,000 people, of which, you know, 2,000 are socially engaged. And so this is kind of a secret clubhouse. this invisible club that we're all part of. But most of the conference attendees don't go there. And if you had 4,000 people show up at TweetUp, it wouldn't scale. That's why, you know, HP and Dell and IBM and Cisco and EMC all had parties where they rented out with space for 500. So mm-hmm. part of this is does this only work when it's a secret club?
I think it will always be a little bit of a secret club, because I do have this theory that social media, I call it the plus one culture. We are, you know, on Twitter, when you like something, you retweet it and say plus one to sort of show your agreement. And I like that concept, because I think the people who raise their hands and engage with social media and use it actively do it on top of their job. So a lot of people say, oh, it's a distraction and keeps me from doing this. But I think the people who are more fully engaged see it for what it is, which it has unbelievable market research potential that you leave lying on the ground if you're not involved. And that it is something you have to do on top of your job. Because even all three of us, I mean, it's not as if we do tweet for a living. Lots of jokes about that, but that's not, you know, marketing, programmatic marketing is what we do at a core. And these are some of the tools we use. I think it asks, again, I have a bias, an incredible bias, but I think that it's hand raisers. It's people who are willing to give up 30 minutes of sleep or do that one thing extra on top of their large to-do list that engage. And so we end up with a very interesting cross-section.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess it also comes down to, when you say, does it scale? The question is, what are you trying to scale into? Again, you have to know, what are you actually trying to measure as success? And whether you're talking about social metrics or anything else, you have some idea of what it means to succeed. If it means to get every single attendee at a 40,000-person conference to go to a TweetUp, it's going to be near impossible or just take way too many people, so it doesn't scale. If the goal is to get this magic bubble of social engagement, well, having the 400 people out of 4,000 that are really socially engaged, that's actually just good marketing. You're reaching the right audience right off the bat and not spending a lot of time thinking that every lead is the same opportunity. So we already know our target, engage your target, and they have greater bang for the buck, which the buck in this case isn't even money, because most of the time we're not even buying things. It's just time. You only have so much time in a given place, and you want to use it well by hanging out with the right people and getting to know them and getting them to know what you're after.
Plus, you engage the loud mouse that way. I don't think that Seth Godin and Malcolm Gladwell and our leaders in these fields call them that. They have nicer terms, but let's be honest.
They're the loud mouths, yeah. Well, they are influencers, as we talked about before. Hey, Amy, you had this concept of activities versus promotion, and we were just talking about what we do is we run programs. We don't just tweet all day. Do you actually train people, or do folks in your organization actually train other people to do this, or does it all have to be from the social media team?
It's a great question. I believe in the teach a man to fish model, and we are in the process. We developed a social media kit. As such, we are training any number of people. So again, I engage our event staff. They're there. They're incredibly smart. They have cameras on their phones, so we can have more people take pictures, generate content. We are working with our MarCom teams to write some of the content that we use socially. So that's been a big thing. I will train anybody on staff. I always go to the booth staff meetings and the calls sort of leading up to any kind of event to encourage people, if they're not participating now, to get as many people converted as we can. And I leverage, we have a hub and spoke model, so I leverage our core social media team, whose job is to train and activate these kinds of ambassadors, to engage these people and link them back to those resources, get them to be bloggers, put them on video so that they're more compelled, more interested, make it easier, lower the barrier, do all those things at once. So you then train people in that method. And these are templates. These are templates that I've handed off and used, and we've done it successfully a few times now. So we are the problem. It's a great problem to have. And I'd love to hear what you guys have to say on this too, that once you're successful, they want you to cover more and more events of all kinds of scale and size. And I actually think you really can barely have two people in a room and not have some sort of a social media plan around it, because you want to encourage the conversation. You want it to go the right direction, but it's impossible for one person to attend everything and to scale in that way. So I think you have to write it down. You've got to have a plan. And I know, Matt, you've got activation kits that you use. And John, I want to hear from you, because you guys run some of the best tech events in the business in terms of making sure people know what the social opportunities are.
Well, it comes from two sides. I mean, if it's an event that we're going to and not running, I've found that the event team usually is too busy to do social on the ground. They're pretty helpful with pre-event planning or tweets to put out or, hey, so-and-so is going to be speaking. Generally, they're busy at the show, and generally if they aren't on Twitter already or are using Facebook, we just haven't had great super success with them actually doing the actual cooking. And so that maybe goes back to your point. That's why they keep asking you to come back, eh? Because they need somebody. They need to be resourced, for one thing, and then they need somebody that knows what they're doing to kind of run in and run all this stuff. Because we are kind of – I've used the word reporter a couple times on this our conversation here today, because you are kind of a reporter as well as a instigator, party host, whatever. For something that we're doing – so actually we just had our first VMworld planning meeting today. Talked about social media, talked about what we're doing. It's a lot of pre-event stuff, which is driving registration, exposing content that's going to happen at the show. Since VMworld is such a big conference, a lot of it is just starting those touches so that people remember that the show is going on and that they had a good time and that they need to come again this year and put that in. But over time, over the next couple months, we'll build out a full we build out a lot of things. We're starting to actually reconstruct the conference of the last couple of years around a hang space. It's always been there, but it's now a more formal concept where people can come and hang out. Part of that space is dedicated just to community people so that they know where to show up. I mean, you've got to – if you don't signage stuff, if you don't let people know, you know, it doesn't happen. We will start working with all the different program owners across the company to let them know what – events are going on for the V-experts and for the socially activated people, the tweet-ups, what we're going to do for – I have a separate blogging program. We give away via our folks in comms and PR some free tickets to people that can't otherwise make it who are bloggers. I mean, they're also – they're not just professional bloggers, right? They're also either customers or partners who – employees of customers or partners who happen to blog. So we have a special program with them, and – we might be doing some more briefings this year. We also have, in recent years, we've set up a network of screens all around the conference that show tweets and Instagram pictures and things like that. And that's a fairly complicated job for one person. If we bring in a giant jumbotron, you know, that's its own cost. It comes with its own crew, but then somebody still needs to put the content up there. And we've worked with vendors and we write our own scripts. So over the years, we've like a coral reef, we have accreted many layers of things that we do at VMworld. And now it's just kind of expected. In fact, we have to kind of reevaluate every year and say, well, what can we do differently this year? But yet, you know, how do we keep the momentum going? But we can't keep on adding stuff and not letting things drop. So
yeah.
How do we keep it fresh?
And on our side, we do the activation kit. We've talked about that plenty. We have a huge hub and spoke model where a lot of people are responsible for social. That said, though, the low level listening and engagement, as you put it so well, Amy, comes down to just a couple people. Primarily, a lot to do with the EMC elect engagement. And I'm pulling a card from John and just say I don't scale. There are a certain number of things I can do well, and if you start asking me to go to a conference every 2 weeks and have a really exciting plan that's unique and experiential and will get people involved online, the answer is no. Just simply no. Here's the roadmap. Here's how it looks. Here's why it works that way. And if you do have enough numbers and enough formulaic proof and a decent few quarters out roadmap already lined up, people tend to back off.
I love this. This might be a great place to sort of tie everything neatly with a bow, which is, I think what all three of us are saying is, and I would love to hear from the listening audience, what other questions you have. The three of us are obviously very passionate about this topic. So number one question to you and the audience, what do you think works at conferences? What have you yourself done? What would you like to see done? Ideas, feedback. So what would you like to hear more about? Are there things that we can dig deeper on? So I think we're all saying, like, there are mechanics. We all have templates. We have plans. This is programmatic. This is not a flight of fancy. This is not a unicorn in some ways. But then the special factor, the unicorn factor, does come in, which is that creativity. And I think it's what draws all of us to this part of marketing that is as much black arts as it is science. that we enjoy that kind of creative element that we put into our jobs. And that's the part where we like to get together and talk. This is why we started the podcast. This is why we're sharing it with you. We would love to hear from you. I don't know. What do you guys think? In the end, we want to share all that we know, give the templates, but there's that little bit of magic I still believe in, which makes the job fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we need to have a part two. I probably need to write down some of the stuff we're doing for VMworld this year. We should probably share some other documents. I definitely think we should do a part two on events at some point, because there's a lot here to unpack, both the role of the social media group in your large organization, you know, the goals we talked about here, the kind of magic that happens. Somebody asked me on Twitter, yeah, do you even need events anymore? You know, everything we've gone through here, I think we can go a couple levels deeper on.
We could do a couple episodes on just the ideas that we planned out and then had to give up because we just didn't have enough resources. I've got a half dozen slide decks of things I thought were really cool and exciting, and everyone did too, but it's just like, what do you prioritize? At some point, you do have to just drop some of them, do a few things really well, rather than do all of them half-assedly.
And also, not everything has to work. I mean, there's a whole lot of contests and promotions and stuff that we've tried that just have fallen flat. And you just dust your hands off and move on.
And don't worry, listeners. We actually have on the editorial calendar a things we will never, ever do again that we'll work on in an upcoming episode. So, but in all seriousness, as we tie off, I would very much like to hear from our listeners. As John said, we are on geek-whisperers.com for the website. We are getting things together and we'll be on iTunes. You can engage with us on Facebook, facebook.com/geekwhisperers. We are at geek_whisperers on Twitter. We want to hear from you. So let us know what you're thinking about, what you see at events, what you engage with, what leaves you flat. This is great feedback for us, and maybe if you're too loud, we'll bring you on the show and get you to put your two cents on here. So thanks a bunch, John, and thanks, Matt. It's been fantastic as always. So until next time, Geek Whispers, signing out.
I just went back to Vegas for the fourth time, and I find it to, in nice terms, to be a festering pit of mankind. But
this is not my favorite spot.
Yeah.